Dayton in Columbus on Tuesday. They call it TV's big night, but viewership for the Emmy Awards wasn't something to celebrate, as we hear from USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, please, all right, I will get this show back on track because that's what I will do.
If Emmy Awards producers were hoping that going without a host would result in the same ratings rebound that the MC-less Oscars saw earlier this year, well, they were sorely mistaken. Emmy Awards viewership dropped to about 6.9 million people. That's a plunge of 32% from last year's ceremony, according to Nielsen data shared by Fox. The dismal ratings marking the first time that viewership for the TV industry's marquee award show tumbled below 10 million viewers. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
And for more news, please remember you can always find us online at usaradio.com or on Facebook at USA Radio. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Hey, it's Joe Peters, and we're getting started with Real Estate Matters. It's about 4:05 on the 24th of September, and we're sitting in scenic downtown Flemington. I have a guest on his way. I haven't seen him show up. So if he doesn't make it for some reason, we'll get started on another subject matter. But I'll be back to you in a few minutes after we play a few introductions from our sponsors.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hot and Hunter In every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hot and Hunter In provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
So this is a spot where they actually ask me to give you, not actually, our local weather report. I do it using a handy Android Central weather forecaster, and it is daily. It is right now 77 degrees. Doesn't feel it. It's a little cool, a little overcast outside. Going to go down to 52 tonight, 79 tomorrow, down to 55, 82 on Thursday, down to 52. 79 on Friday, down to 50. It's starting to sound like Groundhog Day. We don't see any rain. We somewhere around 80 degrees each day for the next 5 days. And then after that, in the evening, it's going down in the low to mid-50s. So a few more of these commercials. I'll be right back.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, Hunterdon Chamber Radio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de familia a familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
So, hey, it's Joe Peters, and we're going to get started. I'm going to talk to you about selling your house this fall. And I've got a booklet that is ironically called Selling Your House, Things to Consider When Selling Your House, and it's the fall of 2019 edition. I would be glad to email this to you if you drop me a note at jpeters@jpeters.com, which is my site. Or just go on, and there's a way to talk to me there. There's a communications chat box where you can give me a note on what it is you're looking for. I work with buyers that are buying, and I work with sellers that are selling. And most recently, I've been working with sellers that are buying and then selling. In effect, they've been looking for a house for a while. The economy is just right. They've got equity built up. And they're looking now to buy a house, and then once they do, they usually have enough equity they could pay cash for the house they're buying, and they want to turn around and sell their existing house. These sellers are very active this year, and I got to admit there's probably seven of them I've dealt with so far this year, which for me is good because there's usually two transactions unless they're moving out of the area. And I love helping people achieve their goals and dreams. So first thing I do is sit down and try to understand what's inside their heads. And then the second thing is work out a plan so that we can get to their goals together. I'm going to save this for another edition. My guest, Fred, did show up. I guess you're on mic number three there, Fred. Yeah, say something. Hello, Fred.
Hello, Joe.
Yeah, we're good. We're talking to each other.
Sorry to be late. The traffic was brutal. Must be a full moon.
Oh, wow. I thought perhaps that was the issue because, in effect, let's get the split screen up for us so I get you and me. There we go.
Because I didn't hear from you, and you're always conscientious. I think Fred will be here any minute, I'm sure. But let me get started just in case.
I also had a couple of phone calls because of all the breaking news that is going on today.
Okay. So talk about that. I mean, first of all, Fred, let's talk about you. You're an investment counselor for people who are already retired.
Yes. Either retired or just going into retirement, and they're usually high net worth individuals or business owners and want to make sure that they have a viable plan and see what needs changing, what needs correcting, if anything, and making sure that they have enough money to do whatever it is they want, live wherever they want, travel, leave a legacy to their kids and their grandkids. That's what I'm all about.
And your company, Fred, is Money Matters?
Money Matters, yeah. Money Matters USA.
And if you want to look him up on the internet, you can find Fred Saide, S-A-I-D-E, I believe.
Yes, at www.moneymattersusa.net, N-E-T.
Okay. And, Fred, what's a phone number for you if somebody wants to talk to you?
908.
Yep.
791.
Okay.
3831.
Great. I'll repeat that a couple of times throughout today's broadcast. So I'm sort of anxious to ask you what's going on, but first of all, let's tell the readers or listeners about your background. So I know you've got a PhD in macroeconomics, if I remember.
That's correct.
But why don't you walk us through it, because there's a lot of education and experience
sure.
there.
Sure. I'm a career financial services professional. I trained as a macroeconomist. I taught at four institutions of higher learning, my alma mater, Duke University, but also at The Ohio State University, University of North Carolina at Greensboro, and was a visiting professor at the Citadel in South Carolina, which is, I don't want to say it's the equivalent of West Point, but it's the same idea. And it's sometimes people go on to West Point. Yeah, it's right. A military school. It's a very fine school.
That's quite a pedigree.
From there, I went to Wall Street and was chief operating officer of a broker-dealer. And then I spent a lot of years, 25 years, as a principal consultant in insurance, banking, financial services, stocks, bonds, variable annuities.
Wow. So I know every time we come on, you have some very thought-provoking direction as to how people already in retirement should take a look at how to restructure what they draw down first to get the maximum tax consequence. And I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit
sure.
today. I mean, I've been watching the chatter today as well. I mean, the market was only down 140, so I don't think it was a tremendous day yet. But there's a lot of, on both sides, suppose which side of the news you read. But why don't you tell us what it means to the investor, what's going on out
well,
there?
It's a great question. Thanks for the lead-in. The NASDAQ got hammered.
Okay.
The Dow was down about 116 points. The Dow went down on the China news. It came back up. And then on the impeachment talk and Speaker Pelosi's anticipated statement at 5 p.m., the market went back down. Again, that's the Dow. So right now, I wouldn't be aggressive about investing in this market. And if you look at the amount of money that's going into treasuries, you see where that's going, and it's forced the yield down on the 10-year treasury.
Right.
So it's not just American money; it's overseas money where yields are negative. But if I were going to go into the market, then I'd buy quality stuff. I mean, Comcast has high earnings. Apple has high earnings. It's not a suggestion that you buy it, but I'm
right.
saying that I would adopt a Warren Buffett type approach. I would buy that. I'd be a value investor and buy high quality, high earning stocks and see where we are a year from now.
So fairly safe havens, but not
absolutely.
But have held through this in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you look at utilities, utility stocks are essentially the equivalent yields of dividend paying stocks or bonds. So, I mean, there's nothing aggressive about that. So far as a retiree is concerned, if you wake up at night or wake up in the morning and the first thing you think about is, how's my portfolio doing today? Am I in trouble? Will I have enough money? Then that's the kind of person I want to talk to. It doesn't mean that we're talking about that you're going to make changes. It means that you're going to talk about what might be involved in making a change and see if that makes any sense to you. That's the first place to start. If the planning was done properly, a person in retirement does not need a lot of additional planning. If the planning was not done properly, if it was just basic planning to move money, then you know, then maybe it's necessary to take another look at that, not because you're going to make any changes, but to understand what's involved in your situation and if what would be involved in making changes. So that's just the first step. That's not moving money. It's just understanding what the dynamic is.
Right. I know we went through this with Marilyn in the last year and a half. She had retired and wanted to move her money from where it was to something that she felt was a little more. She had a great accumulation engine where she worked, and she wanted a better investment engine. And we moved it into a managed fund that is geared at people, and it depends where you are on a risk tolerance. We're probably at about 3/8 of a tank if you look at the gauge in our mind.
It's a good way of putting it.
It's sort of interesting because when the market goes up, it goes down. When the market goes down, it goes up. And I said, I think we're invested properly.
Yeah, that is properly. And you have to also look at what a person's risk capacity is. It's not just their tolerance, but it's their capacity. How much loss are you willing to accept? So women generally are more conservative than men, and generally want to accept less loss than men are willing to accept. Men tend to be a little bit more aggressive, I guess, as built into our DNA.
Yeah.
But there is a point where you have to say, well, if the market's going to go up 15% and it's going to go down 15%, am I better off with something that takes me up 15 and down 15, or am I better off with something that takes me up 9 and hedges me at 5?
Right.
Is that a better trade for me? Because most people don't have a hedge, and they're really trading the S&P, and they're going to go with the peaks and the valleys.
Well, it's interesting. Just a side conversation. She had a first grandchild for her.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, and I mean she's elated. She's on cloud 9.
So sounds like my wife.
I want to put $100 away each month to start towards her education. She says, I realize I probably won't pay for the first semester, but it'd be more than I had. So we went and we talked to the fellow that does her work, and he said, it's great, and there's plenty of these numbers for these things and there's plans and whatever. But he said, what you probably really want to do is take a look at a little more risk than you'd be willing to take, because over the course of her investment cycle, if you take into an average cycle, you're probably going to get 8 or 9% out of it over 20 years, and she's going to have enough for the first semester. He said, but if and he guided us towards Indian-based funds. He just felt it was a segment that was a little more return and not a lot more risk. And he said, you might get 18 there versus 9 elsewhere. And he says, even if it has a bad year, you're still going to get the 9. So we decided to start there. I'm not sure it was good advice or bad. I can tell you in a year or two.
You know, as a general rule, the what you're doing, which is saving regularly, is more important than yield. Because even at 2 or 3%, at age 65, that will add up to $1 million.
Right.
So if you get something short-term and take it off the table and put it someplace else, I wouldn't let it ride. I mean, it's like when I go to Las Vegas, I never go to Atlantic City, but when I go to Las Vegas, I'm always fascinated by craps. And I'm always fascinated watching a guy or woman who has got the hot dye, and you know, there's that enormous pile over there, and then suddenly they don't know when to quit.
Right.
And it wouldn't matter if that was $500,000, if it was $100,000, or if it was $3 million. They're going to give it back to the house. The house is going to win.
They're sitting there patiently waiting.
Yeah, they really are. And, you know, they're plying them with whatever drink they want. But, you know, they want to generate that card so they can just get a credit limit and so on.
One of the things, we typically play roulette because there's no rhyme or reason to the game. Yeah, you could be better or worse at playing it, but if your numbers are going to come out, they are, and if they're not, they're not. And we usually play the same numbers. But One, I play blackjack just to get this. There's not only understanding the game, it takes a lot more intelligence to play blackjack and experience, but at the same time, there's a betting game in blackjack, because you know how your number might come out. You might win four or five in a row, and then you'll lose four or five in a row, and you have to bet with that in mind. So I was always trained that you start with five, that's your bet, and then if you win, you go to 10. If you win, you go to 15. If you don't, you go to 25. If you lose, you go back to five. You don't stay up at 25. You want to ride the wave when you win, but when you lose, back to five, start all over again. Most people, no matter what they do in life, whether it's in stock or if it's in other investments, including real estate, do not have an exit strategy. And it drives me nuts. I have a woman that we may know together, but she lives in Wachung. She lives in probably what's a modest house in Wachung's $1 million. I would say that's about where she's at. And she's saying, no, sooner or later we're going to have to sell. I'm saying, I think the later is here. The higher priced and bigger houses do not have the demand. And with the interest being where it is and the demand being where it is, you may not see these prices again for a while, if ever. That's an exit strategy. But, you know, then by the time she gets home and explains it to her husband, she doesn't do a good job and he doesn't want to listen to her, and on it goes. Stocks, any investment, houses, it's all the same situation. What are you trying to do, and when is the time to get out of it?
Well, one of the challenges that anyone who is involved with advising people, just as you're advising people about real estate, and I'm advising them about money and other mortality-based transactions. There are a couple of challenges that you always face. One is an assumption that they have that the recent past will continue. That there's absolutely no reason for them to do anything other because they have this pattern that they've gone through and the pattern has been successful. So why is it going to change? Just because you say or I say it could change? I've got my experience. So that presents an enormous challenge to them. So they're not willing to even discuss or even think about change, and that is a problem. If the change is a major change, they may not have any experience with making sound decisions for changes of enormous magnitude. For a transactional change, it's to one and done, and it's not a big deal. It's low risk. But when you're talking about a real strategic change, real change, then they're going to have a problem with that, and they may have to go through stages of discussing the possibility of change, what's involved in change, and then they may not be committed to that change at the end of the conversation. So that's an enormous challenge, whether it's a tactical change or a strategic change.
Right. And the fellow just left. You missed him, but he's a West Point graduate, spent 23 years overseas. He's coming back on a show next week. And we talk about strategic versus tactical. And for a lot of people don't understand it. Strategic is the big picture. That's the macro.
Yes.
Tactical is micro. That's
sure.
What I'm going to do.
That's exactly right.
Even in the service, it's thought out that way. You're going to fit into a bigger picture that you may not understand, but you're going to work the tactics of what it is you're doing within that picture. But the powers above, and I remember when I was in retail, and I was back in retail when we were buying and selling and absorbing each other, there was a guy who ran, I don't remember who he ran, but I remember he was involved in what was going on with one of the bigger specialty store chains. And he'd buy a company, and next thing you'd know, he'd be laying off 20% of this force and 30% of that force. And people said, can you sleep at night? He says, I don't look at people's faces. I just look at the top of their heads. And there's a lot of truth to that. Somebody
has
to be looking not at the person that's getting affected, but the direction that they're taking the company in.
Well, there's so much truth to that. Come back to that other point you were making. If you're a year from now out, I mean, you're going to look back at this as a blip.
Yes.
There's no way to know what the impact, if it runs true to form, the way the market performed when President Clinton was going through impeachment. It was part of that 10-year period where the market performed terribly from 1999 to 2009. It was an awful, awful market. And so if this happens to with Trump and with the problems with China and China trade, who knows where this is going to go.
Let's separate the two and talk about what's happening today separately. So China, I've had three or four people tell me if we could get a pact with China that was bulletproof, not that that may ever happen, that the market could rise thousands of points just on that news. We should all live that long.
Yeah.
But we seem to have a market that's wandering aimlessly. And I remember when you were on a show once before, you said what makes the market is future facing, and what makes the market change is what people who know more than you and I, maybe not me, you, but me, are looking at 6 months down the pike.
Yeah.
And a change like this, like I saw China cancel the trip to come visit the farmers and some of that. And I think some of that is tactical more than strategic. But they still canceled the trip, and it still made the market take a correction, made all the farmers in some particular state a little ticked off. If it's part of a longer-term plan, and that plan works, well, then everybody's going to look back and say, that's what we had to do to get there. But nobody can see that going forward.
What's the incentive for the Chinese to make an agreement with us? I don't see anything that incents them to do that. If Trump gets reelected and they have to deal with him, they could make a skinny deal with him if that's what they choose to do, and he may take a skinny deal in order to end the stalemate. So that's a possibility. The manufacturing is not coming back in this country. It's maybe less than 15% of our GDP is in manufacturing. It's not going to come back. Even coal is at its limit right now. I mean, the coal industry is essentially dead in this country. We have cheap natural gas that has replaced it. And I see nothing that will get coal back above about the 10%.
Well, and on top of all the tree huggers, not that they're right or wrong, but they are.
Yeah.
They're a little stronger than they were a year ago. And I think what I'm seeing is I think Trump kept his promise to the coal to help get some votes last time around. Whether or not he can make it go any further is another
question. You're right, but I do think they're at the limit right now. 10-11% is as far as it's going to go, and there's no the opposition against nuclear power is enormously great. But we depend here in the Northeast on nuclear power. I mean, in the winter when it's cold and we need energy, we run out of coal and oil capacity. If the nuclear doesn't come on, we're going to be very cold in our houses, and our businesses are going to stop functioning. So we need nuclear power. It's our backup. It's hard to see it as the main engine, but it would be an important engine if there wasn't so much opposition to it. So I don't see it happening.
What percentage of our power grid is nuclear at this point in time?
Less than a quarter.
Okay, I would have thought it was less than that.
Yeah, it is less than that. But I
had the fellow on at the solar panels last week, and he talked that we had 113,000 solar powered homes in New Jersey. I said, okay, that's impressive, but how many homes do we have in New Jersey? Well, I looked it up. There's 1,300,000. So 113,000 is sort of minuscule, but it's better than it was 5 years ago and much better than it was 10 years ago. So we're going in the right direction. And he's stating that because of the energy credits are there and mandates that we have to be 50% by this year and 75% by on renewable energy,
it's a good step in the right direction, but I honestly think, Fred, that it's like understanding that the sun is eventually going to explode. And when it happens, we're all going to die. And we're all gambling it ain't going to happen before our natural end of life. So we're not worried about it.
No.
And I think a lot of these things go into that same bucket. I'll give you a great example. We are making head over bound changes for urban housing at the affordable housing level between now and 2025, and nobody's looking at 2026. We're just complying with what we have to comply with to get by.
Right.
And nobody thinks they're going to be in office that long or that it'll be their problem.
Well, that's always the issue with politicians. I'm going to do what needs to be done while I'm here and let the next guy worry about it because it doesn't help me.
So I listened to a Joe Rogan interview with Jamie Wetzel. And Jamie, I've got to read one of his books because he's very much into the bio reengineering. His latest book is Hacking the... Who's the biology guy? The theory of apes and all of that stuff. It'll come to me. He said that when dealing with China, he says China is, in his estimation, doesn't mean he's right or wrong, a country of engineers at this point in time. And they think within the box. They don't think outside the box. So everybody's doing what they're doing. And he gave a great example of it in the nuclear bomb with the people that worked first in Germany and then on our, what was it called, Manhattan Project. And it was, they invented, within the box they were working in, they designed nuclear fusion. And somebody took it and combined it with something else and made a nuclear bomb. And he said when they dropped that bomb on Hiroshima, with very strong German accents, the comment was, what the F did we just do? And they never intended it for that use.
Sure.
So that's back to the guy looking at the top of the heads versus in their eyes saying, I can take this and I take that and maybe a little bit of a third thing and do this with it and I solved another world problem. Or if you look at some of the history that went forward, because after Eisenhower took over, he used it as a big stick and scared the crap out of everybody. it never really accomplished, according to what I've read, what it was he was trying to do with it. But he kept us out of war for, you know, until the Vietnam thing was lingering, but after Korea. So anyway, let's get back on track. So it looks to me like China solving this issue could have a good positive effect on the market if it ever happens. But your point is well taken. What is their impetus? What would make them do this?
I don't see that they have any advantage. They gain nothing by making an agreement. An agreement helps Trump. It doesn't necessarily help them. They can manipulate their economy. They can print money. They can use their central bank.
Right.
They can buy commodities elsewhere. They don't have to buy it. Buy it from us. Their major meat staple is pork. They don't need to import expensive beef, high grade beef, mm-hmm. prime beef from us. It just doesn't have to happen. And everything else. I mean, there are real issues with technology, artificial intelligence. Learning intelligence, robotics, all of that is they either develop it or they're able to acquire it one way or the other. I recently watched a documentary on one of the streaming video channels, and I'll tell you the truth: I could not tell the difference between an American plane, and a Chinese plane or ship, or their uniforms or their instrumentation or anything else. I mean, if it could have just easily been an American ship. But so far as projecting power goes, they only have one aircraft carrier. It's a diesel carrier, which they bought used from Ukraine. Ukraine seems to be all over the place lately. So they don't have any ability to project seaborne power the way we do. They certainly have the they certainly have rocketry, and they certainly have nuclear weapons. And there is no possibility. You'd have to be insane, right, to get into a war with them. We made that decision in the Korean War when we realized we couldn't beat them, so we settled for stalemate in Korea, and nothing has changed.
That's amazing. So, if we put China aside and talk about the Ukraine for a while and what's going on in politics, my observation is, and I lean conservative to be honest, is that a good offense is the best defense. And I think in order to protect old Sleepy Joe, as Trump calls him, and I have a lot of respect for the guy. I think he did good for the country. I also think there's some questions, okay? And I also think that he doesn't, I'm over 70, and I couldn't vote for him just based on age.
Yeah, I happen to agree with you.
There's a major issue there. But
yeah,
since there seems to be some dirty laundry because of his kid, he says different than his son says. And I read up on it, and it turns out, and most people don't realize this, that his son got a job without any expertise for the job. That looks like a political cronyism. And it was a huge job in a company he knew nothing about, in a country that he knew nothing about. And not only did he get a job, but right alongside him was John Kerry's son, who got a similar job. I mean, so I think in order to protect that, because Hillary opened that drawer, not Trump,
yeah,
there's a lot of offense by saying, oh, yeah, Trump had this conversation with the guy in Ukraine. I think what Trump has to be careful about setting precedent, but I think he's got to disclose what happened,
yeah,
and do it in a fact where he takes this off the table, because I think it's a give-and-take game. There's a constant barrage of discrediting Trump, and I'm not so sure he doesn't need to be discredited at times, but it's relentless.
Well, you know, I don't know what happened, how the Democratic Party went from the loyal opposition to the resistance. It's one thing to be opposed to policies that the other side is doing. That's normal,
yeah,
politics, but I think this is beyond normal politics. I heard former Vice President Biden's statement. He alleged that withholding aid is unprecedented. It's not unprecedented. We've done that before. We did it to Turkey. We've done that to Taiwan. The Reagan administration punished Israel for taking out a nuclear reactor, which they didn't like the Israelis doing. They withheld over $1 million, which was pretty much the budget for supporting Israel at the time. So this has happened before. It's not unprecedented. We beat the British up after World War II. We wanted them to disgorge their empire, turn it into dominions for those that were English-speaking and those that weren't. We wanted them to grant independence. We made very harsh terms for loans that we gave to the British government, then Labour, then in power. So this is not unprecedented, using our resources to effect change in a direction that we want. But we are a great power. We're a superpower, and superpowers do have an obligation to lead. And when they don't lead, then problems occur, because smaller powers then realize they can advance their ambitions unchecked. And that does have repercussions for us in the economic and the financial arena. Fortunately, we are not really dependent on oil from the Middle East, and it's only about 10-12% of our oil is now imported from Saudi Arabia, and some of our refineries need Saudi crude, but that's it. We export crude. We export natural gas now, since it was changed since the end of the Obama administration, fracking. It makes an enormous difference. So we are not quite energy independent, but we're all
about in the right direction. It has fracking has some ecological issues, but it still is solving a problem. And sometimes I think we do what we need to do.
Well, you know, if 50 years from now, we probably will be carbon free. But right now, you know, until you can show me how solar power will run my car,
yeah,
I'm still going to depend on a gasoline engine.
Right, right. And when, back when we're going to get rid of beef and get rid of the airplanes, and somebody was saying, how's that somewhere from Hawaii going to get to Washington?
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I tasted a that new veggie burger. Then I looked at the fat content. There's less fat. There's less fat in a hamburger that's been grass-fed than, or even a bison burger or a turkey burger, than in that veggie burger. It was loaded with fat. Tastes like the real thing. I give you that.
It's interesting because Marilyn now works for a company handing out samples, and she, like I, read labels. We took a course on low carbs. I'm pro low carbs. I've said 90%. She's about 50%. So we both lean in that direction. Me stronger than her. She says, Joe, I can't eat the stuff I'm selling. There's so much stuff in here to make it taste good.
Sure.
And she says the people that are coming in for the free samples aren't reading it.
No.
And we actually said, well, I like these frozen Black Angus hamburgers, and you get about 15 or 18 of them for $20. And you can throw them on the grill for only 2 minutes. You got a hamburger. Yeah. So I read. She said, we better read what's in it. We never read the label. And there was no, you know, normal amount of fat. It's just meat. It's probably processed in a way you don't want to process, but there's no additives in it. We had a guy came in selling these pre-frozen home meals for us, okay? You have to buy 15 meals worth of stuff, and it turned out to be less than $5 per meal per person. And we said, let's try it. But when we read what was in it, there was so much sodium in it, neither one of us could touch it. And there were much more other things in it than that. So people do not read the labels on things, and I think as a result, stuff like this will get sold. It's being marketed, and it's creating a difference.
It's being marketed as a healthy alternative, and that's the problem because of the fat content. If you're on a fat-restricted diet,
sugar-free and fat-free are like a balancing act. You can't have one without the other.
Well, that's the problem. If you read the labels, if it says no fat, it's got sugar and salt. Yeah. If it's got fat, it'll have low sugar and low salt.
Right.
So you have to do something for taste.
So when I was used to sell software, you can appreciate this. We used to say, good, fast, cheap. You can have any two. Okay? It just works that way.
Yeah.
And, okay, people weren't as conscious as we are today, and people didn't have the... You know, Marilyn will say, we were watching this. There's a thing on that Ken Burns did on country music, and it was talking about fiddles versus violins. She said, what's the difference? I looked it up, and in 10 seconds, I figured a violin was a fiddle used in country music. It's the same thing, or vice versa. You have this at your fingertips. You can figure it out, but most people don't. Most people come home and plop in front of the TV and watch the crap that somebody wants them to and you see the stupid commercials over and over and over. It's beyond me how people go through life watching this and buying this. So where does... You said there were some changes that we should talk about as far as seniors. What has changed in 2019 as far as how a senior looks out on their investments?
Well, you know, for one thing, if you're again based on risk tolerance and risk capacity, if you have a portfolio that's just simply chasing returns, it's a very dangerous place to be. I see portfolios constantly optimized as though this was 2013 or 2014, and without taking into consideration that where we are right now. And I look at the returns, I look at the portfolios, and we run it through our software, and we see all the issues in most of these portfolios. Most of these portfolios just optimized in one direction, and that's up. And when the portfolios hit some heavy water, heavy seas, if you will, shouldn't say heavy water in light of a hydrogen conversation, heavy seas be better. That's very dangerous because then you get into losses. And if your portfolio is just simply the S&P, and even if you think it's not, you have to look at what the fund managers or what your exchange-traded funds, what are you invested in? If you're in spiders, you're generally going to be in the S&P 500. And you're just going to roll with that. You're going to roll up and you're going to roll down. Well, if we have another 40% drop, if we have another 2008-2009, that's a heck of a road to climb back from, because it's not just earnings, it's all that principal that has to be restored. And if you're in your late 70s, you're in your 80s, you don't have time like a grandchild right. does for that. So there's a real concern there as to how much, what is your risk capacity? How much of that portfolio are you willing to lose? And how much of that is dependent on the market's performance? And if all you're doing is emulating the Standard & Poor's, and if someone is what I'll call closet indexing, and I'll explain that, that's where you're paying somebody a fee, presumably to manage the portfolios within a fund context, but all they're doing is buying the S&P, then you're not getting any benefit for what right. you are paying. And if you're paying fees above and beyond that, then you may have a very expensive Standard & Poor's 500, and you're going to mimic the performance, but you can't emulate the performance exactly because you can't earn the dividend. And so when you look at the performance, that performance is with dividend. So you have to back the dividend out and say, what's my upside here, but how much is my downside? And this is dangerous because people today, with the change in the tax code, people have very few deductions that they can get. And you really have to have significant wealth to be able to send your $100,000 to your favorite charity as an IRA contribution. The average person can't do that, and because it's just easy to sit down, you're going to write a check. But that doesn't do you any good because you're not going to get a deduction for it because of the increase in the standard exemption. It's pretty much eliminated most deductions. Right. Here in New Jersey, with the real estate taxes in general being so high and the SALT cap, if you had alternative, if you paid the alternative minimum tax, you got a real benefit because you get recapture. You get 7 years worth of recapture. If you weren't subject to AMT, then you're just capped out, and there's not much you can do about it. So you have to look at what are your alternatives, and that really is a question of how you harvest income, because some forms of income by themselves, say Social Security, right. by itself is not taxable. Social Security and $20,000 of IRA income, for example, would generate no federal income tax. So if you have a substantial stock portfolio, $72,400 is about the equivalent in terms of capital gains to about the 12% ordinary income bracket. So you have to be very careful about how you're harvesting income, where you're taking your money from. The traditional pattern is to defer tax-deferred IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, anything of that sort, until the back end, Roths only if you have to, and take your taxable, you take the your after-tax accounts first, take your brokerage accounts, Social Security, and then the IRA type account, and then the Roth only if you have to, or life insurance if you were young enough to have used that as a Roth alternative. But that's not an effective way of taking money. There are many studies that show that you need a different type of harvesting pattern, not only to reduce the current income tax, but also to prolong the life of the portfolio. With longevity being as good as it is, a person in reasonably good health has an expectation of getting into their 80s, and that means that's enormous pressure. Yeah, in order to be able mm-hmm. to provide income, in order to be able to pay for medical expenses toward end of life, and other long-term care or custodial types of expenses that are inevitable at that point. And understanding the interplay between your income, how you take income, and what you're going to pay in taxes is vitally important, because the imperative here is to control the growth of taxable income.
Right.
If you cannot control the growth of taxable income, and if you look at the chart on the tax brackets, you could be up in the 27% bracket very, very quickly.
Right.
And once your Social Security is taxable, virtually everything else is taxable, including tax-free municipal bonds are not tax-free. And you get an argument about, well, maybe we should still have tax. Maybe I should put my money in munis anyway. Well, you have to see. If that's what you want to do, then you have to see, again, is that going to grow your
wow.
taxable income?
So it's complex, and it sounds like you have a good grasp on it. It sounds like you're looking at the top of those heads and making
yeah.
people make sure they're marching in the right direction. Once again, I'm talking to Fred Saide, S-A-I-D-E, with MoneyMattersUSA.net, if you want to look at his site. And he's at 908-791-3831. Fred, we only have 2 or 3 minutes left. I mean, it's amazing how time flies.
Yeah, I can't believe this. This is the fastest hour in radio.
So what points? Fred, once again, specializes more in harvesting than in growing. Okay, he wants to help you grow there as well. But how do you take what should be taken first to solve? And I know our tax advisor said that, see, that piece of pie, you never can get to it. Somewhere or other, that government's going to get paid that tax on you. And the only way I see cheating them out of it is that because they've raised the minimum deduction so low, there's a little more falls under it. So if you can take it really gradually, they're not getting what they used to get. But they're going to get their share.
Yeah, they will. For a younger person, we try to cap out the amount of money that they go in, that they put into tax deferreds, because we know what the taxes are right now. We don't know what it will be. We know that some of this disappears in 2023, the rest in 2025, and depending on who's elected president, anything can happen. And if we take the candidate seriously, that means at least a 50% increase in the ordinary income rates. And it's not a matter of, oh, well, so what? I won't pay it. Yeah, you will pay it, because what people don't realize is that within the brackets, up through the 22% brackets, there are what's called effective marginal rates. The effective marginal rates are separate from the ordinary rates, and they also impact the capital gains.
Right.
And those effective marginal rates start at 10%, excuse me, within a 10% bracket, and they go up. They go up as high as 50%.
Wow.
And it doesn't take much. All it takes is Social Security or some ordinary income from an IRA and some qualified dividends, and you're at 49.95%. Multiplied against the 22% bracket. So that's a big nut.
That is. And a marginal rate is what, if every dollar you earn, what are you going to pay taxes on that
yeah,
extra dollar?
Yeah, it's the next dollar you're going to lose yeah. to Uncle Sam.
So once again.
Who's Fred, not your uncle, by the way.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we'd like to think of him favorably, though. Fred Saide, S-A-I-D-E, MoneyMattersUSA.net. Fred, we're going to have to do this again in a couple of months. 908-791-3831. My name is Joe Peters. I'm going to play my commercial. And we will be back next week with Real Estate Matters Update to tell you what's happening in the real estate market. And Greg will be on in about 4 minutes to take you into some music.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Thank you, Fred. I appreciate you driving all the way over.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump is dismissing the growing prospect of impeachment by the House. Speaking in New York, the president says it's a continuation of a witch hunt and says that some supporters have told him that impeachment would be positive for him. Arizona Republican Congressman Debbie Lesko says enough is enough regarding all this partisan politics.
I serve on Rules Committee, so at 5 o'clock today, we'll be talking about this resolution that the Democrats want to push forward on Ukraine. This is so partisan. I serve on the Judiciary Committee, too, and every single day, we have multiple hearings per week. It's all about bashing President Trump, his administration. There was another one that happened today, earlier this morning.
A final look at your numbers on Wall Street. The Dow was down 142 points to close the day at 26,808. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
So there's this guy named Jordan, and he's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. But then he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage four. And here's the thing. He had switched from medical insurance to MediShare, which is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this really going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. If you want to find out more, here's a number for you. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
Democratic presidential candidate Tulsi Gabbard says President Trump's actions on Iran are not in the interests of the American people.
First of all, the United States has no treaty alliance or security agreement with Saudi Arabia. So the United States responding on behalf of Saudi Arabia would really be unprecedented. Second, we've got to understand that Iran is retaliating, that this situation didn't just come out of nowhere.
The Democratic representative from Hawaii speaking there on Fox News. Republican Senator Josh Hawley is demanding Facebook take action to prove it is trying to be fair to conservatives.
Quit harvesting people's data, sell off these companies that you're using to create a monopoly, and do a third-party audit. Submit to an independent third-party audit to prove that you're not biased against conservatives.
Senator Hawley met with Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg last Thursday to discuss issues including privacy and allegations of anti-conservative discrimination. And you're listening to USA Radio News.